This week, we welcome Patrick Orzechowski, Vice President of Research and Development at DeepWatch, to discuss why DeepWatch chose Splunk to secure customer networks. In the Leadership and Communication section, how BISOs bridge the gap between corporate boards and cybersecurity, five questions CISOs should ask prospective corporate lawyers, good leadership is about asking good questions, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Week. Stopping advanced threats requires knowing exactly what you're up against. ExtraHop Reveal X is the only solution that shows you not just where intruders are going, but where they've been. 90-day lookback and complete network visibility across the data center, cloud, and device edge help security teams respond 84% faster with ExtraHop Reveal X network detection and response. Explore the interactive demo at securityweekly.com/ExtraHop. As a security leader, CyberArray for Teams was built to make your job easier. Are you struggling to measure your team's skills proficiency, provide critical or relevant role-based training, or translate training investments into meaningful business outcomes? CyberArray for Teams is the industry's number one NIST-aligned DoD 8140 and 8570 compliance certification and skills training platform. 96% of the Fortune 500 have employees training on CyberArray. CyberArray for Teams, skills development solved. Visit cyberarray.it/solved to solve your training problems.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 202, recorded January 11th, 2021. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here in Colorado. Joining me from G-Unit Studios are the birthday boys, Mr. Paul Asadorian and Mr. Jason Albuquerque.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Happy birthday, Jason.
Why,
it's been such a strange year for so many reasons. Did the Browns win a playoff game? Is that
what? Yes, they did.
Wow! First they made it, then they won one.
I mean, it was a wild card, but still, they won.
Anything can happen.
That's right.
Anything can happen. Do you have a specific guest or topic that you want us to cover on one of the shows, not including the Browns? Submit your suggestions for a guest by visiting securityweekly.com/guest and completing the form. We will review those suggestions monthly and we'll reach out to you once reviewed. Also, learn how to conquer cloud complexity in our first Security Weekly webcast of 2021 on January 28th. Register at securityweekly.com/webcast. If you've missed any of our previously 2020 recorded webcasts or technical trainings, they are available at securityweekly.com/on-demand.
Matt, I thought you were going to say also the Steelers turned the ball over like six times in the first half as well, but you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll talk about that in the next segment. This segment is sponsored by DeepWatch. To learn more, please visit securityweekly.com/DeepWatch. Patrick Orzechowski is a seasoned cybersecurity leader and technologist building analytics-driven solutions for the past 15-plus years and one of the founding members of DeepWatch. He's worked in many industries, including telecom, healthcare, and the U.S. intelligence community on both blue and red teams. He holds a Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science from Stockton University and a Master's in Computer Science from James Madison University. Patrick, welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sorry to start the whole thing with Browns trivia. I know we were talking about Philly. They just fired their head coach, so you get to start over, I guess.
Yeah, we're not as excited in Philly as you are in Cleveland, but we'll get there.
Yes, we'll get there. Every team goes through its turn, right? It just took Cleveland like 18 or so years.
50 years? I don't know.
50 and counting, actually, if we think Super Bowl-wise, yes. Yeah. Patrick, we're going to talk about your decisions and kind of your process of how you chose Splunk for your customer base. But before we jump in there, I wanted to kind of back up a second. I mean, when we think about organizations and their cybersecurity program and building out security operations. Some organizations are going to build it themselves. Some people are going to outsource it. But what are some of the big challenges people have around building out a security operations program?
Yeah, I think number one is the diversity of data right now out there from a security perspective. Being you know, an enterprise nowadays in the post-COVID era, you're moving a lot of your traditional data center stuff to the cloud. You're in a hybrid situation. You're using SaaS products. You're building things on serverless platforms. So, you know, the old traditional syslog everything to your SIM and get that data in there is a little more complicated. And when you're building it yourself, there's a whole slew of requirements that you have to look at when you're building the brain of your sensor network.
Right. And when we had Corey Bodson on, I think, Enterprise Security Weekly last year, we were talking about data and what data should you collect and not collect. And that's the sensor side of the conversation, right? So you just right. kind of gave us a quick overview of like all the different types of data. But now I got to take all the sensor data and I need to bring it together so I can analyze it to really understand where are potential issues in my network to fix it. And that's the brain part of the conversation. Right. And so there's a lot of potential brains out there. What are some of those kind of key capabilities or criteria you should be looking for in your brain?
Yeah, for sure. So, as evidenced by all the startups and cloud native providers building SIMs and data aggregation platforms, you know, we have a lot of different requirements and criteria for choosing that brain, right? For me, and when it came to building out DeepWatch's platform, time to value and flexibility was the real key there. We went down the path of, looking at traditional SIMs, looking at cloud native, building our own, and we landed on Splunk because it's flexibility and it's time to value. We knew we could onboard customers very quickly, and we can also onboard analysts quickly because of things like free text search and the GUI interface, and allow analysts to really ramp up quickly to find cybersecurity outcomes versus, having to learn a query language or really having a long time to ramp up on a new SIM.
Hey, Patrick, this is Paul. Thanks for coming on the show. I wanted to ask you, how was your evaluation process and ultimately like results different from an MSSP perspective versus an enterprise perspective? Was there some overlap there, you think, or like different requirements?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of overlap from a service provider perspective, but for us, the flexibility of having different deployment capabilities mm-hmm. from a service provider perspective was important, right? Splunk has Splunk Cloud, which is their cloud native SaaS platform. You can also deploy on-prem for customers who have to keep their data in their traditional data centers. And we also have our own cloud that we've built out for customers who want that out of the box turnkey SecOps platform that doesn't just include Splunk, but it's the, from a raw alert all the way to, a ServiceNow ticket.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you seeing shifts now with the pandemic from last year of these different deployment models? Are more people, now moving away from on-prem and moving into a cloud or a hosted service?
Yeah, we've definitely seen a shift, even from traditional industries like healthcare, who have, compliance requirements to keep things on-prem. Looking at the cloud and looking at SaaS platforms as an easier way to deliver those outcomes to their customers. Authentication is a perfect example. When we started DeepWatch, it was mostly Active Directory data from on-prem, domain controllers. Now you have Azure AD, you have products like Okta and Duo, where you're bringing in data from cloud native into your SIM platform. And the easiest way to do that is if the platform sits in the cloud as well via API.
Yeah. I mean, API integrations with other SaaS providers, it makes it easier when it's in the cloud to create. Yeah. Otherwise, you're punching a bunch of holes through the firewall to make that communication happen.
Yeah. I was going to say, Patrick, I think you hit the nail on the head, too. I mean, you're building an ecosystem now where you can onboard talent quickly, right? You can onboard your analysts very quickly with the technologies that you're using, the best of breed technologies, and then bringing your own differentiators to the table, right? Building your ecosystem out. You know, one of the biggest struggles that organizations have with thinking about whether you buy or build is, I'm going to tell you, the biggest expense is the people, right? I mean, at the Absolutely. End of the day, the human capital is going to be the most expensive asset that you bring to the table. So you know, the innovation is taking the technology, streamlining your processes, building context, your ability to onboard analysts quickly and get them up to speed quickly. And then, hey, by the way, the innovative squad model that we've talked about in the past, which I think is absolutely outstanding. Those are the differentiators. I think it's a full gamut of differentiators you're bringing to the table, and the technologies to help support that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So onboarding of new folks coming in, we wanted to make sure we chose a product that wasn't a heavy lift from a training and ramp up perspective. You know, I use the example of searching for an IP address. If you know an IP address is doing some badness on your network, you don't want to need to have to teach people SQL or another query language. You just want them to be able to go in and search the IP address, get some context, and then, you know, provide a ticket to the customer. Mm-hmm.
You mean a select IP from table Y, where isn't intuitive?
Well, and there's so many different query languages now.
Yeah.
And I think those solutions work well when you've got, you know, the right team that has the right fit with that technology. And Patrick, it sounds like you just want a much more quicker, you know, time to value, because you've got a lot of people working for a lot of different companies, and that makes total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's another reason why we don't support any other analytics platforms or aggregation platforms. We want to make sure that, you know, our analysts and engineers are experts in that Splunk platform and don't have to worry about any of the other products out there. Not that there aren't other, you know, fantastic products in the market. We just wanted to make sure we stay focused and we give the outcomes to our customers that they want. You know, they oftentimes they don't want to know how the sausage is made. They just want to know that we're giving them good cybersecurity outcomes.
And that's time to value right there, right? Standard process means you're streamlined. And at the end of the day, Absolutely. They want a result. They want an outcome.
I think it also creates some very interesting flexibility in the model. Is by standardizing on the brain, the sensors are now where you get flexibility, because there are lots of sensors out there, right? You don't have to say, well, I've got to be this type of endpoint customer to get value out of this, because you're standardizing the analytics really at the brain, not at the sensor level.
Yeah, absolutely. And we make sure that we normalize the data as it comes in as well. So, you know, one of the advantages of Splunk is schema on the fly. You can send it raw data all day and do free text search. But we also want to make sure that those fields that are important, like IP address, like username, those types of things, are normalized. So as you mentioned, Matt, we can take in any product and really focus on what the user or the host is doing, and not, you know, the specific feature of the product or how the logs come in or any of that.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Now, when we think about what's the value to the customer side, right? We've talked about aspects of flexibility. I've standardized the brain. We're going to allow the customer to have a little more flexibility on the sensor side. That's great. But what other advantages do you get as a customer with this kind of standardized brain process, especially from a managed service provider?
Yeah. So again, you know, we allow the flexibility of bringing in any product, and really economies of scale, right? So when we write an analytic for a product or for a customer, we can take that analytic, run it through our content management process, and distribute it to all of our customers automatically. So it really allows us to scale. When, you know, an analyst is doing great work for one customer, we can take those queries and those analytics and distribute them to all of our customers. So all of our customers get the advantage of, you know, the work that's being done with one. And, you know, we're starting to focus on industries now. So healthcare customers, you know, we're making sure that we know exactly what to look for in their environments, you know, manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I took a quick look at the ecosystem, right? The differentiators and part of it is your ecosystem. I mean, you know, you have best of breed with Splunk, but you're also teaming that with best of breed other products like ServiceNow, right? So that allows you to create things like knowledge bases, internal, external knowledge bases. So you could have verticals looking up, you know, certain items that are related to them and then publish that out to your customers too. So I think, you know, having that information that you're gathering internally, but then having the ability to use a powerful platform like ServiceNow to help enable that information sharing is massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's the advantage of choosing a flexible brain, as Matt's putting it, making sure that you can integrate with APIs for outcomes like ServiceNow. And you can integrate for active response capabilities if that's what you need, right? If you want to shut down an endpoint, you need to be able to have an end-to-end identification of what that original raw event was that will eventually become that, you know, active response capability.
The other interesting thing we talked about a little bit on the economy scale, you were talking about, you know, leveraging an analytic. But that also means you're sharing data between these squads, right? And we can't forget about the human element that the managed service provider brings in. You guys have a unique model, but you know, the ability to share across squads, I think, is also a very interesting angle when you think about it, because you might have some focus in a specific area, and that focus can be leveraged by other squads, maybe in other industries. Talk a little bit about the human element here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that really is where the rubber meets the road when it comes to incident response, right? Making sure that a human puts a set of eyes on things before it gets to the customer. We started DeepWatch knowing that we didn't want to be just another reflective alerting platform, right? We didn't want to take an alert from an EDR platform, for example, and just ship it to the customer. It doesn't really provide a lot of value. So we wanted to make sure that our squads and our analysts look at these things and make sure that there's context there, right? The squad model allows us to, you know, really have that good knowledge of a customer's environment, right? I've seen this before. It's their phone scanner, for example. You know, let's go ahead and make sure we don't alert on that. And that knowledge, you know, snowballs into the point where, you know, we integrate really, really well with our customers via Slack, and making sure that we have that, you know, human communication mechanism that's not just, you know, a canned alert or a canned report.
Right. Yeah. Canned reports don't provide a lot of value, as we know from our days in the vulnerability management space. So where should a customer start, right? When you think about going down this path of evaluating a managed service provider, you know, where should they start? What should they look for in their provider? You know, we've talked about some of the highlights around DeepWatch's offerings, but what should customers that are looking to engage these type of services, you know, one, what should they look for? And number two, where should they start? Because this can become a very large engagement over time.
Yeah, it's a massive partnership when you do partner with MSSP or MDR, right? It's we call it a marriage. You know, you get married for a year or 3 years or however long the contract is, and you want to make sure that it's the right fit, right? So first, I would start with, you know, do they support the products and platforms that are already in place, right? If I'm an Azure shop and your MSSP doesn't support Azure, then it's a non-starter. And you know, the next thing I would look at is making sure that the MSSP focuses on keeping the minutiae of maintaining a platform, a complex platform like a SecOps platform, away from, you know, my security team, right? If I was a CISO, I would want to make sure that my security team is focused solely on my business security, and not, you know, keeping the lights on with Splunk or keeping the lights on with any other product, because, you know, it's a full-time job just to manage and maintain these platforms, right? And then you have a team doing that, and who's looking at the actual, you know, incidents and alerts coming from this platform.
Yeah, and that's the key, right? I mean, that's a huge value add right there, because the talent pool is so slim these days that you know, if your staff is busy in the weeds, busy on the run, you know, I look at organizations, I've said it before on these shows, is I look at organizations in really three modes. You can be in run mode, which is keep the lights on, or you can be focusing on growth and transformation of your organization. And the value of having a partner, and I consider it a business partner. At the end of the day, you know, your MSSP and your organization need to be tied at the hip. And it's all about knowing who owns what, right? And at what time, who owns what. So the value that you bring is you now allow the teams to be able to focus on the growth and transformation of their program.
Absolutely. You know, the security program takes a backseat a lot of times to, you know, troubleshooting, especially those inline things like firewalls and EDRs and things that can cause outages and introduce risk into the business. So yeah, we want to make sure that we're a good partner and we're allowing those teams to sleep at night when it comes to keeping the lights on, as well as providing, you know, our inherent cybersecurity expertise and giving that partnership value, you know, to the customer and giving them, you know, the warm and fuzzy that someone's watching the wall, you know.
Yeah. One of the questions that came in from Discord, you know, one of the complaints about Splunk sometimes is cost. It can get pretty costly to run Splunk, right? The more data you bring in, the more costs you incur. How do you balance that in the different offerings from DeepWatch? And I think this ties a little bit into that second part of the question, which is, you know, where should organizations start and where do they go? And how do you manage costs as you're maturing through that model?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned it. We have a maturity model that we roll out for all of our customers that prioritizes the data sources. You know, in a perfect world, you bring in every piece of raw data from your organization, terabytes and terabytes and terabytes a day, without any added costs. But that's just not how it works, right? It doesn't matter what platform it is. Splunk gets a bad rap for being expensive, but other platforms are expensive as well. And at the end of the day, you need humans to look at that data, right? So we help our customers prioritize the data that's coming in to make sure that, you know, we're looking at the things that the attackers are looking at, right? So, you know, we don't want to bring in, you know, on day one, DHCP logs, for example. You know, we want to make sure that we're getting those authentication logs, DNS logs, firewall logs to make sure that we're catching the things that are the low-hanging fruit. Now, that's not to say that other log sources aren't important. It's just we prioritize them to make sure that we get the most bang for our buck from the Splunk license that the customers have.
And that's the key, is the economies of scale, right? I mean, we used to do that internally all the time where we'd have that shared business model, right? And now as things over the decades have progressed, now you're looking at that shared model now becoming a partner. It has to be, right? And you're realizing economies of scale on your side where now you can basically bring that value now to the customer.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can take all of the lessons learned over years of ingesting data and tell a customer, hey, you know, you have this license. Let's make sure that we get the right data in first, right? Some of these nice to haves are great, but, you know, at the end of the day, you want to catch the bad guys in your network. Right. So yeah, that's excellent point. We need to make sure that we.
And you just said it, right? Over time, you've learned onboarding best practices. Here are the log sources you want to start with. Here are the next set of log sources as we mature and as we learn your organization, right? And your program matures, here's the next set of log sources you want to bring in. You've built those best practices. You don't have, you know, as a client, you don't have to repeat that. We're learning from you, right? And what you've done with your customers. So yeah, again, economies of scale across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an iterative process, right? As we bring on more logs and more products, we leverage Splunk Base, obviously, but we do have lessons learned and we tune our regex and we make sure that we're, you know, getting the absolute correct data on an iterative process. So, you know, the next time we have to do it, you know, it makes it that much easier for the next customer.
Patrick, do you find customers are taking some of those more chattier logs that maybe for your analysts and other analysts aren't as useful or critical pieces to the puzzle? Like you mentioned DHCP logs, you could lump DNS logs in there as well. Do you take that and send those off to somewhere else that's much cheaper to store to have as a reference? Do you find these hybrid approaches being effective as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, those heavier log sources, the chattier logs, you can dump them to S3. Mm-hmm. You can dump them to a syslog server for forensics later. And we do see customers doing that. Mm-hmm. DNS, you know, internal DNS obviously is super chatty. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as SolarWinds shows us, you know, those DGA domains via DNS are critically important. We want to make sure we're catching those for our customers. So definitely, you know, we can differentiate the types of logs too. If it's external DNS with, you know, yeah, external internet based domains, we prioritize those, but maybe your internal DNS is one of those more, you know, nice to have.
Right. Yeah. When we were talking about that with database query logs go in that category as well, because you tend to turn those on and do some troubleshooting. Then you're like, oh my God, I have to turn that off. Right. But then there are specialized vendors that have some specialized use cases depending on your team where you may want to collect those logs, but you know, looking at that every day for security,
use them when you need them.
Yeah, it's probably not the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll filter out the chattier stuff too, right? If it's a web database, some of those selects that happen a million times a day, we might filter out. But a select from the user database might be something that we want to look at.
Right. Right. Yeah, and then you can have a solution that stores all those, and maybe you do go back and look. But I like your strategy, and we talked with Corey about this, of like you guys and folks know that these are the most valuable log sources, and we know we can do great things with these sources. I would love to have that for our organization, set that up. That gives now the organization much more freedom to go, well, what do we want to specialize in? Like, mm-hmm. maybe we do want to have a place where we store all the query logs and we're doing performance analysis, right. maybe some of our own security and application profiling, mm-hmm. right? But I know that I've got a team that's cherry picking the most valuable and effective log sources and has a team whose talents and skills are tuned towards that as well. I think that's really in my assessment from listening, that's the value.
Absolutely. Yep.
In the other balance that has to be thought about here is it's not just the cost of the Splunk implementation. Mm-hmm. It's just the cost of Splunk and all the resources to analyze the data. And, and hopefully, you know, when you think about an MSSP, they've got that balance kind of in balance, right? I mean, to the point where you're whatever data you're bringing in, there are resources there to analyze, evaluate, and extract value out of it. Because the people costs we already talked about at the beginning of this segment, they're expensive. Mm-hmm. They're even more expensive than these tools. So it's not just a Splunk cost either.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you could evaluate any of the aggregation platforms out there, and there's always pros and cons. You know, one might be cheaper, but they only support a handful of log sources, right? One might be more flexible, but you know, it takes a whole DevOps team to maintain and manage it, right? Yeah. So you know, you have to weigh all of that when you're making the choice to mm-hmm. you know, bring in logs and build an aggregation platform.
Yeah, definitely important. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly.
Thank you so much.
To learn more about DeepWatch's managed service offerings, please visit securityweekly.com/DeepWatch. We'll take a quick break and then cover the leadership and communications articles for this week.
DeepWatch provides innovative managed security services that empower organizations to be more resilient against today's evolving cyber threats. DeepWatch offers game-changing capabilities in managed detection and response, managed endpoint detection and response, and vulnerability management, all delivered through a unique squad model, a dedicated group of security experts that works directly with each client. From managed security operations to threat hunting to continuous measurement of security readiness, DeepWatch is advancing the service of managed security. Measure your SecOps maturity for free by visiting securityweekly.com/DeepWatch. Most breaches are caused by exploiting oversights in basic cybersecurity fundamentals, but complex hybrid multi-cloud infrastructures make cybersecurity hygiene challenging. Red Seal can help. It shows you what's on your network, how it's connected, and the associated risk across public cloud, private cloud, and physical environments. With Red Seal, you'll get control of your cybersecurity fundamentals so you can protect your organization from the inevitable attack vectors and reduce your cyber risk. For more information, visit securityweekly.com/Red Seal.
Welcome back to Business Security Weekly. I am your host, Matt Alderman, joined by Paul Asadorian and Jason Albuquerque. Do you want to stay in the loop on all things Security Weekly? Visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher or our YouTube channel. Sign up for our mailing list and join our Discord server and be able to ask questions live like we just did in the previous segment. Also, if you missed Security Weekly Unlocked, you can access all the content on demand, whether you registered before the live event or not, by visiting securityweekly.com/unlocked and clicking either the button to register or the button to log in. Gentlemen, before we get into articles, I was just thinking about the game last night. As people know, the Browns finally made it to the playoffs, right? And they beat the Steelers. But think about this for a second. Their head coach is out of commission, right? He's on COVID-19 mm-hmm. protocol for a second. He can't communicate with the team. He can't do anything. They've got assistant coaching and all these people playing. I mean, think about the leadership communication, like planning that had to go into mm-hmm. being able mm-hmm. to execute a game plan and actually pull that game out. I thought it was – I was thinking about the show today. I'm like, think about that for a second from a team perspective and from a leadership communication perspective. Yeah. Able to plan all that in advance and then execute it live.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. And especially if you watch the first half, because you know they were locked into their game plan, right? And you know, the first half, I was astounded at that game.
It
blew my mind, right?
And of course, the need to have a really awesome quarterback versus sure. a head coach.
agreed. Yeah. Hey, Tampa.
right, but I didn't watch the entire
but they
game.
Executed.
I caught quite a bit of it. And the QB for the Browns, what's the QB for the Browns?
Baker Mayfield.
Mayfield was, I mean, I he was on point. Mm-hmm. I watched his throws. I'm like, that dude's on mm-hmm. point right now. And it is a team effort, Matt, to your point, right? Like, there has to be some leadership lessons, communications that are on point, as well mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. players have to be on point. Also, as with things in professional sports, like a little bit of luck, right? Like the turnovers mm-hmm. with a little bit of luck.
Sure.
I can't sit here as a Patriots fan and go, we haven't benefited from a little bit of luck every now and again, right? Like that definitely, it's not gonna be the thing that builds your dynasty or makes right. you win the Super Bowl. But right. yeah, like those things to help. Because don't forget, you get things in the other way too, like mm-hmm. really crummy calls
sure.
that have happened in the NFL. It goes the other way. So it kind of balances out and forces you to go back on like your players have to play well and have mm-hmm. a well-executed game plan.
Every single player executing on what they were meant to execute upon.
But now translate that to cybersecurity. Like mm-hmm. the same things I just said, absolutely 100% apply to business leadership and cybersecurity.
All
right?
Day long.
Like,
all day
sometimes,
long.
Sometimes, I just told my HVAC story, right? Like, sometimes they go in your favor. Like, yeah, I just right. happened to be like, right. I just traded a patio set for some electrical work for our new studio setup. Like, that was kind of awesome. Like, there was a little bit of luck to play.
That's part of your strategy. What are you right? talking
like,
about?
Like, I can't say that I strategized and left my crummy patio set up front and knowing that someday I might trade it for electrical work, but yeah.
But at the end of the day, you have a good risk mindset, and you said, "You want to yeah. know what? That patio furniture is not what I'm going to let that go."
Some days you're going to be responding to a security incident, right?
That's
like, because I've been also on the flip side of that. I've been in Disney World covering an event where I've had to spend all of my non-event time doing forensics on our website because mm-hmm. it got hacked. And that mm-hmm. stuff happens too.
Yeah, and we got some good articles in here. The first one was this interesting. Business information security offer, this BISO role, right? This new role that's evolving, that's kind of bridging the gap mm-hmm. between the board and the cybersecurity team. I was curious, Jason, have you seen other organizations? I mean, they list out some of the orgs that have them.
I have.
You know,
and we've talked about this on the show, Matt. We've talked about this. We've talked about having, and I call it the business analyst level for security out there in the organization, right? IT did this a while back. IT has that analyst role that goes out there and looks at the different business units, is embedded in the different business units, is learning the business, right? And security has now matured to that point where we have to be doing this. We have to have folks embedded in the business, knowing what finance is doing, knowing what HR is doing, really being in tune with the business. So that way, you know, that information can bubble up to the CISO or whatever your security leader is, and you can make good corporate decisions across every business unit.
And this may not be a single role in some of these organizations. True. There could be multiple BISOs if you think about the size of some mm-hmm. of these organizations.
100%. For a larger organization, it has to be, right? I mean, one person isn't going to have the bandwidth to be able to know how every single business unit acts and interacts with the organization and know the details of a happy birthday.
I mean, it was I could see it. You saw, if you're watching the video, you saw a glass of scotch slide into frame as Jason was talking.
I can't say that I planned that. It made me flip my focus over to happy birthday.
That's it. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Cheers.
We're celebrating with scotch.
That's it.
Wish you were here, Matt.
That's what you should celebrate. I do as well. It was funny. I just opened up the 25
Glen. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Moron. Yeah. Because Lauren's like, why is that big box up there? I'm like, that's a good point. That was for my 50th. I got to pull this. I got to start drinking this.
And I tell you, I delved into that Glen Moray 25 because I bought a bottle for myself and I hadn't, around even before Christmas, I hadn't opened it. Mm. And I did, and I was like, oh, my God. Now I know why I try and hide this from myself because it's so good.
Yeah. It's been a little while that we've built our relationship, Paul, and it was only this year that we realized our birthdays were so close to each other.
Because we're at that age where we don't want to focus on birthdays.
Yeah, you're only one day apart.
That's awesome.
Oh, so funny. Oh, gosh. Next story. 7 cybersecurity priorities CISO should focus on for 2020.
We know this for 2021.
We covered a similar story last week, too.
Yeah.
We know this.
I mean, this was, it's the same old stuff, I think. The order was interesting to me. Right, a little bit. Again, I when I read these articles, I kind of read them in order, and I'm like, okay, I get the first one. But then it's like you jump to invest in cloud security without implementing basic IT hygiene, looking at borderless security, creating a culture. It's like, really? Do you just dive in like to number two? I think there's a few other pieces here that make sense.
It's interesting as we're putting our agenda together for labs as well. It's interesting we're talking about starting with things like attack surface management and vulnerability management, because I think in terms of this list, and I mean focus for the year or whatever, I think focus in your program, it's super important because they both speak to helping you build and maintain that basic level of hygiene.
Sure.
Right? Because you can't just build basic hygiene and then forget about it.
Right.
It's something it's a horrible analogy, but a good analogy in some cases, right? So forgive the analogy, like brushing your teeth and the other things we do as personal hygiene, right? But in this sense, I thought those two topics, for me, are really exciting this year. I think attack surface management is exciting because of the automation to help you discover the external threats is so super important, and it's not the sexiest, right? It's not what we're talking about with the SolarWinds breach, where it's third party, getting a foothold on your systems. But like that doesn't even come up on your radar unless you understand your external threats. And vulnerability management is so important in terms of that basic hygiene. You know, again, if someone does implant malware into my systems and does not use a vulnerability, that's the things I want to focus on. I don't want to be spinning, and we just talked about this last Thursday, and what I took away from the interview and segment with Vicarious was, I don't want to spend my cycles on vulnerability management anymore. I don't. I want to allow my prioritization to be informed, to use machine learning and AI to form my prioritization, and I want to just automatically fix this.
Well, we talked about in the previous segment, right? Get rid of the run. Try to get rid of the run as much as you can. Automation, partnerships, things of that nature. Get rid of that run because you want to be focusing on the growth and transformation of your organization. It's imperative, right? I will say that being on this podcast for the past 2 years, right? 101 episodes at this point, right? I will put something out there to the authors of these articles and say, notate whether or not this is order of priority, right? Because again, they have 1 through 7, but is this in order of priority in your view, or is this just literally thrown out there 7 items, right?
And I think they take from the backlog and like mix the order up.
I don't know, right? But for me, you know, I look for that now. And I, you know, when they give us a list of here are the things you want to do, is it in order of priority in your opinion? Or are you just listing 7 things?
You got to take that as a grain of salt. Because I think one of the things missing perhaps from this list, I don't know if you could lump it into there, but with zero trust, again, I get it. The term, it's not the right term, but it's an increased level of trust. And I think that when you're looking at your software supply chain, that there you have to be applying and plan on applying a lot of that trust. What's going into the software that I'm building and what's going into my systems that I'm building?
Yeah.
And looking at that from those different angles, right? In your SDLC, it's going to look slightly different than it is from I'm building out, you know, cloud infrastructure, cloud natives, or whatever the case may be. I'm building out my IT infrastructure versus I'm building a software product. Maybe you build a software product to support your operations and infrastructure like we do here at Security Weekly. But you have to be, think once you get the basic hygiene stuff and that's humming along, I think based on some of the breaches we've seen, some of them are like devastating ones really center around being able to trust your supply chain and your software.
No, absolutely. And you know, that number one, make cybersecurity a boardroom agenda. There's so many pieces that fall underneath that, right? So many pieces. I mean,
there's a whole
your risk management, your asset management. I mean, you have to have that context of your organization to be able to do that and be able to speak to your board about business risk, because they're really not going to care about how you're building a borderless security model.
No.
They're just they're not.
They're not.
Right? That, I mean, that's a good thing for you and your team to maybe have conversations around in the strategy, but that's not what you're going to be talking about with your board.
No. Well, you mentioned asset management. That's that's a great conversation with your board, because not only is there some business and cost savings you can bundle in there, but there's a huge security benefit to it, because you can't 100% secure what you don't know about. But I can also tell you that there's two business units using the exact same software, and we need to consolidate. Maybe we need to find something to replace both, or we need to consolidate under both and use a federated identity so that we can apply controls and have auditing for all kinds of things. Yeah. Not just the SolarWinds breach, because we can only talk about that so long before it's going to be a distant memory, but it's going to be, I want to protect myself from insider threat of all the different types of insider threats. All those things. Yeah. I don't know. Building list of priorities again. I like you said, somewhat subjective.
The ISF article, so we can skip over, actually highlights these points, right, gentlemen? Talks about asset management and in risk profiles and profiling threats and some of the things that you need to do. And we sometimes forget about this. We talk about basic hygiene. We're like, look, I think vulnerability management's good, Paul, right? That's a piece. Attack surface management as we move assets outside. But are we doing the basics around understanding what assets we have? What's the risk associated with those assets? How are we profiling threats? Sometimes we forget about that basic piece that wasn't covered in the previous articles. ISF talks about it here a little bit in their article. This is one still, I think, big gap for a lot of organizations.
No, I 100% agree. And again, it's the details and the context, right? Because you could be looking at legacy software that the risk of that software totally outweighs, right? Keeping it within your organization. I mean, in many instances, organizations don't want to spend the money to get newer platforms or newer application platforms or some line of business systems, things of that nature.
But at the same time, they don't want to spend money maintaining and limping along with not even limping along, but maintaining that
at a
level, right? So you've got your legacy application, like the kind of state that we're in. Now we got to go build a React interface, because that technology is available, widely deployed, and that's what the users are expecting.
Absolutely. But part of basically my point to that was, you know, you look at that the fourth article and it says estimating financial loss, right? And a lot of times you're not bringing that context into the boardroom or into your executive team, saying by keeping this legacy application running and alive, here's what it really costs. It's not just the maintenance bill. It's not just the people you have managing it. It's beyond that. It's bigger than that, right? And one of the big stories that I have is, you know, one of our customers, major company when it comes to retail, right? And they limped along with a legacy PBX system for a very, very long time, simply because they didn't want to make this massive investment globally, right, to upgrade their PBX system. But what the leader of that organization did was they came to us and said, listen, we want you to come look at this as an expert in unified communications. Give us a risk profile. What are the risks that having this globally brings to the table, right? And what's that cost around that? That actually gave them
the strength. Operational risk, security risk, all playing
all of the
PBX,
above, right? Yeah. And then the management risk, the people that they'd have to bring on the organization to properly support it, that gave them the conversation at the executive level to be able to invest in a new platform.
Right?
So
that was a case, I would venture to guess, that was, it's going to cost us more to maintain this legacy PBX than to go with, you know, basically a VoIP system in unified communication.
And potential risk of, here's what would happen with the basically the threat landscape of having all of these legacy endpoints and legacy technologies and legacy applications,
right?
They didn't just have to keep that ecosystem, that they didn't have to keep that core PBX legacy. They had to keep the ecosystem legacy because of all the interactions. Yeah. You got to think voicemail, right? Mm-hmm. Basically the management software for their agents, right? So all of that legacy ecosystem had to stay in play as well. Mm-hmm. And then they couldn't grow and transform the organization because they were stuck.
Yep.
But you know, the leader was very smart and said, hey, come in here as experts, do an eval top to bottom of risk to the organization, technology risk, business risk, all of it. And that's what won the investment for them to upgrade. Multi-million dollar investment.
Oh yeah, I can sure. For, yeah.
But they realized that was the better investment, right? Mm-hmm. Not deferred maintenance.
Yeah.
Like they did for a decade or more, right? Right.
Well, and they built some technical debt into
exactly.
They shot themselves in the foot with technical debt.
Right.
So we covered an article. It was a joint report from Synopsys and the Center for Software Integrity and Quality. And they actually measured the amount of money it was costing to have poor security in your applications. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because you guys have hit on a couple of the components. They measured that the cost of poor software was $2 trillion. $1.5 trillion of that was just from not patching systems and the patch management and the vulnerability stuff we had already talked about. The other $500 billion was supporting legacy software and legacy systems. Right. And that was costing organizations about $500 billion a year. Sure. Tech debt they measured completely separately is another $1.3 trillion cost to organizations by having all this accumulated tech debt. So you guys hit on these pieces, and there's actually reports that break some of this stuff down if people want to go find it.
Oh, absolutely. I know businesses who literally their core business is supporting customers who have legacy platforms. Yeah. That's how they make all their money, right? Mm-hmm. Because they realize that they can't find the people to do it anymore. The vendors and manufacturers no longer offer support, but these organizations don't want to jump off. So they're literally their entire business model is supporting legacy ecosystems.
Yeah, because how do you hire a telecommunications engineer
from 1970s technology? Right.
Which don't get me wrong, it's cool, and a lot of those people work for the phone companies internet providers, right? And there's a niche for that still, but it's not. Uh-huh. You know, if you're getting a degree in that, I think you're more into the unified communications aspect of it, right?
That's it.
It's more of a networking person, which is interesting. Is we talk about the progression of a lot of these career paths are more technology driven.
And hey, by the way, the networking person now is now a DevOps person, right?
Yep.
I mean, I never thought I'd see the day of networking folks on GitHub sharing code, but we are, right?
Yeah.
All roads lead. That's it. That's amazing. It.
And lots of breaches in repositories. So what happens when you have an incident? Who's going to support you in court? You know, which law firm should you look at? This article is interesting on the five questions you should ask prospective corporate lawyers if you're a CISO, knowing that you need some legal protections later.
Yeah, I mean, just from my experience, look at a law firm that's just not, you know, their core talent, right? Look at the partnerships that they have as well, because not every law firm is going to be expert at everything unless they're one of the major, you know, global law firms, right? Or national law firms. And you know, I can say when GDPR was rearing its head, the partnership that our attorneys had was immense, right? I mean, literally, I was on the phone with the UK, you know, every other day preparing for that. So it's, you know, it's the partnerships. It's what they can bring to the table, the talent they can bring to the table.
Yeah, you know, I think I told the story last year when it happened. You know, one of my friends, CEO of a company, they had this business email compromise that wired money overseas, right? Yeah. I pointed them to places where I knew guys could help, right? And it was great. I'm lucky that we know who some of those people are and where those relationships are. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you're a major organization, does your existing law firm have some of these connections? Are they in a position to actually help you through a breach or an incident? And I thought this was a good article for people to kind of start to look at, you know, do I have the right people protecting me later?
Yeah, 100%. And part of the key is making sure as a security leader, risk leader, compliance leader within your organization, get connected with your legal counsel. Get connected with whatever business unit has that relationship, right? And stress the importance of having those conversations, because sometimes a security team doesn't have that ability to have conversations with your legal counsel. Mm. Push it. right? Push that relationship. Mm-hmm. Build a relationship with your legal counsel. It'll benefit you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did the ISF article. So now I go to, you know, leaders ask good questions. Mm-hmm. And this one resonated with me because kind of in my new role at Cyber Risk Alliance, I'm asking lots of questions. And it's interesting, right? Because depends on who you ask the question to is which answer you get. And is it really the right answer, right?
100%.
And so I'm digging into this and I'm like, ask big questions. I do, right? Like, yeah. What if we change this? What if we did that? Because you're going to get a lot of people go, I haven't thought about that. Or, whoa, I don't want that to happen, right?
Right.
And I'm doing it like every day. And I'm like, yes, involve others, right? The sales team. Mm-hmm. We're talking to the events team, yep. Right? We're talking to the audience and the marketing team, right? You've got to involve all these other teams because everybody has a little piece of the puzzle. Right. And what I'm trying to do is solve this interesting puzzle mm-hmm. around our portfolio and our offerings and our sponsorship packages and stuff. And there's a lot of people involved.
Sure. Yeah. And I'll say, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier was order of priority of these, you know, 1 through 3 here. And for me, culture, I think, is the top, right? Because as a leader in the organization, if the culture isn't already there to allow you to ask questions, help build that culture. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I put in big asterisks in my notes, challenge the process. You want folks who can be in your organization who are going to challenge the process. They're not doing it because, you know, they want to put down a particular person or a business unit, right? Build a culture where that's something that is expected, something that is championed, something that you celebrate. Because challenging the process only makes you better as an organization. You want people challenging the process mm-hmm. all day, every day.
And that's what I'm doing, Jason, which is interesting part, right? Is I'm trying to think about things in a different light mm-hmm. from a different perspective, yeah. right? We're cybersecurity professionals that have worked in the industry for a long time, worked with a lot of our sponsors, right? So mm-hmm. I'm bringing a different perspective into the organization, trying to change our culture a little bit to say, do we have the right process?
That's it.
Just because we did it this way for 3 years, does it right. mean that's the way we should yeah. do it for the next three? I'm not sure.
Right.
I was quoted as saying today, like, my job is to take you out of your comfort zone.
That's it.
And that's 100%.
100%. That's a wonderful thing. And mm-hmm. it's a must have these days, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know, to one of the items is promoting innovation and highlighting innovation, right? But at the end of the day, unless you're challenging the process, unless you're bringing that to mm-hmm. the table, and unless you have folks comfortable with that, you're not going to achieve that outcome, right? Being out of your comfort zone just going to mean that's going to mean you're that much more innovative and mm-hmm. you're really thinking things through at a deep level. But the one thing that I took a lot of notes on, which I think, you know, it would only benefit folks as they're asking big questions and challenging the process. When you look at the portion that says involve others, I want you to think of others as just not your peers in the organization, other employees in the organization, your board. I want you to think of it in the context of clients, prospects, partners, right? You have to involve people outside the industry. How many times have we sat here after a show and talked about things that are going on in our lives, right? Where I can bring that back to my organization and my organization benefits from it. Or, you know, Security Weekly benefits from that conversation. Involve others in your peer network everywhere. Right? Make those connections. When you're asking those big questions, ask them around the horn.
I'm asking these of our customers, our sponsors, like, mm-hmm. what are you seeing? What's working? What's mm-hmm. not working? Because I want that, to your point, I want that perspective as well. I want to build better programs. And that means not only internally, but externally. Yep. What are our sponsors looking for? Mm-hmm. What is innovative in the things that they're seeing? Can we integrate those back in, Jason, to your point?
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of peer conversations, but yeah. We have to be external in this conversation as well.
All day long. And think of the power when you go back to other leaders or your executive team and you say, you know, other organizations in our industry are doing this. Our partners are recommending that. Manufacturers are recommending this. And hey, by the way, here's what our clients are actually cheering for and they want, right? They mm-hmm. want this to come out of our organization. That's immense amount of power you can bring to the table when you can bring that level of context, because now the executive team can make well-informed decisions mm-hmm. based on all of this feedback and all this data gathering that you're bringing back.
Yes. And one of the potential outcomes is the negative side of this, which is mm-hmm. why I paired it with this next article, because this instinctively happens at times, sure, right? Sure. Maybe the organization doesn't want to change culture, and a lot of the work that you're doing is going to be turned more to the negative. So how do you handle that? How do you come in as somebody who's trying to make the right changes mm-hmm. for the organization, but it's viewed negatively?
Sure.
Look, I've had plenty of times in my career where that's happened on the other side of the coin, right? Where you're your best intentions to move things forward, but it just turns up to be sure. negative on the other side. And so mm-hmm. I paired it with this article because I've lived through this on the other side.
Yeah. And I, you know, I look at negativity as a perspective, right? Because at the end of the day, you may be taking it as negative, but maybe it's something the organization isn't ready to do yet.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something your leaders aren't ready to accept yet. Mm-hmm. You know, you're there for a job. You're there because folks want you to bring your opinion and your business knowledge and your security knowledge to the table. But at the end of the day, they're not always going to go with exactly what you want, right? And that's why we've talked about this before, that always try to build toward an outcome. You could come to the table and say, here's my plan to achieve XYZ. And the organization says, wait a minute, well, hold on. Mm-hmm. We're not ready for that yet. So you take a step back, you rethink it and say, how can I get to that same outcome maybe in a different way? Right. And you really have to take it back and think about it. Maybe as a leader, you delivered the message wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe you can deliver it a different way. Maybe you can build a different strategy to bring everybody on board, get everybody on the bus. Right. And it's an iterative process where you take steps to get there.
Exactly. And maybe it's you leave things exactly as is, mm-hmm. build some structure around other components, then yeah. over time measure and make those changes for That's a better it. Outcome in the future. Because I'm living this right now, mm-hmm. which is why I brought these two articles in, is because I'm trying to learn a broader portfolio, trying to learn what's working, what's not working, and how do we as an executive team start to make mm-hmm. changes for the better outcome later. And I can tell you, it's not all going to be what I originally kind of envisioned.
Sure,
it's going to be pieces that have to get integrated in different ways to achieve the final outcome longer term.
Yes.
Because it's not that easy to change the ship that quickly.
That's it. You can't spin an aircraft carrier on a dime. It doesn't happen, right?
I like the number one: don't let your emotions get the best of you.
Totally.
Because I think I used to be of the opinion that it's not about feelings, and I think it's not about feelings all the time, right? Because what I've learned is, and probably should have learned it sooner, but empathy is about feelings.
Right.
You can't discount that entirely. I think largely not about feelings until such time when there mm-hmm, is. And mm-hmm. I think that's a good quality for a good or great leader is
sure.
knowing when to make some things about feelings, which I think is
100%.
Less of the time. Because like mm-hmm. I said, empathy, you got to understand other people's feelings, their perspective on things, how they're feeling about mm-hmm. something, I think is important. So I thanks to you folks and these articles from the great authors, you know, I've learned.
Yeah, big time.
Definitely learned that as a skill.
Yep.
And I think reflecting on learning opportunities, you got to reflect on your failures as well.
Totally.
Probably more so than your successes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the successes are what they are. You did the right thing. Yeah. It's repeatable.
Right.
How do you take?
Great.
Right. Mm-hmm. How do you take something that didn't necessarily go your way, learn from it, and then change the outcome next time? Next mm-hmm. time you get that shot, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. Change that outcome. But yeah, you know, defensive is bad, right? Never let them see you sweat, right? Mm-hmm. If there's a decision that doesn't go your way, it's okay. Take it back, reflect on it, see what you can be doing different. And you know, as a leader in an organization, at some point, sometime, maybe it'll happen. Maybe either you'll outgrow the organization or the organization outgrows you, or, you know, when there's not that fit anymore, you'll know it, right? You'll mm-hmm. you'll know when it's not a fit. And that, you know, for me in my career, that's when I've said, you know what, maybe it's time for a change, right? So, you know, it's a scenario where you go through these decisions and it gives you a level of context to success. It gives you a level of context to the culture, right? And you can make good decisions for yourself from there.
Absolutely. And yeah, to your point, that last one, that action plan for yourself, sometimes mm-hmm. it's staying with an action plan, and sometimes that action plan
yeah.
is going to find another spot.
It happens.
Right?
It happens. Yeah. It does. It's the natural cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Next week's a holiday, so we'll see you in 2 weeks on Business Security Weekly.